At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello, everyone. This is Rachel Bernstein, host of the Indoctrination Podcast. And today, I'm releasing a special feed drop. That's when we share an episode from another show right here in the show's feed. And this is a way podcasters get the word out. In this feed drop, you'll hear my full interview from the podcast, Meredith For Real, a podcast that explores taboo questions and cultural blind spots. On this episode, Meredith and I discuss the intersections of politics and cults, the vulnerabilities that make people susceptible to political cults, the psychology behind political allegiance, and the manipulation tactics used by media and political figures. If you haven't already done so, go check out her show. Thanks for listening and enjoy this feed drop from Meredith For Real.
This is Meredith For Real, the Curious Introvert, and I'm Meredith. Around here, we explore taboo questions and societal blind spots. My mission, and yours if you choose to accept it, is to inspire curiosity by exploring the nuance and paradox of our world. Each episode is different, so bring your ADD and your earbuds and have a look around. The political landscape is just so completely strange that you have to wonder sometimes, is this mind control or something? My guest is a professional cult deprogrammer, and in this episode, you'll hear who she says is the most vulnerable to political cults, why religion and politics always seem to be in bed together, the psychology of political allegiance, and media manipulation. If you end up liking this episode, you'll also like the one with the happiness researcher about the idea that your happiness may be getting politicized. That's episode 156. Lastly, whether you're new or a loyal listener, consider this your official invite to my private Facebook group. I regularly conduct polls to get an idea of what you're liking most, do occasional giveaways, and post content in there that I don't share anywhere else. You can search MFR Curious Insiders on Facebook or click the link in the show notes to request to join. I hope to see you in there. All right, friends, keep it curious. It's getting people uninvited to barbecues, unfriended on Facebook, and upping our meds. What is it? The state of our political discourse. But while each side is accusing the other of being brainwashed, one can't help but wonder if the system itself is the reason we've turned our neighbors into enemies. My next guest has spent the last 35 years helping former cult members and those who have loved ones in cults. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist, cult specialist, and host of the Indoctrination Podcast. As a cult specialist, her work focuses on emotional abuse recovery, identity repair, and moral injury. But today, she's going to help us navigate the psychology of our political climate as we ask the question, are political parties actually cults? Dedicated changemaker and multi-platform cult deprogrammer, Rachel Bernstein. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's my total pleasure. Thank you so much, Meredith, for having me. It's great to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. Since our first conversation, one of the things that you taught me that I will always remember is that you're like, oh no, what did I say? Is that being recruited by a cult is not evidence of a weak mind. It's evidence of a right time vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And that cults are just particularly skilled at finding what you need and becoming it. So family for the person who's lost a family member, a sense of belonging, a sense of power for people who feel powerless. So let's start there. What are some of the right time vulnerabilities that could get a person sucked into an actual political cult?
That's such a good question. And yes, I love that you remember that. It's interesting that I mentioned that to you because I feel like so often people are demonized or criticized or looked down upon for being susceptible. And sometimes it's a who issue, but really more about who is the manipulator in the scene, not who is being manipulated and how skilled they are, but it's a when question. And people will say to me, I was vulnerable then in a way that I wouldn't have been even a week before. People, I think, with our news media are just being groomed all the time to be open to these messages and sometimes feel the need to take them on for their own safety, you know, if there's fear-mongering, et cetera, that makes people very vulnerable. So when people are vulnerable is often when they're feeling disenfranchised, they're feeling isolated, they really want to be a part of something. They want to be a part of a group of people that is aligned in their thinking or a philosophy that is tending to their newfound fears, and usually fears that have been cultivated by media or by political parties. It also happens when people have felt very disappointed by their government and they have found that something has happened that really has rubbed them the wrong way. They then are open to other messages from other political parties. But I do think it's mostly to kind of heal a divide between people and society because they want to feel a part of something and a part of something great. And also to heal a divide inside of them that they're feeling split off. They're feeling like they're feeling conflicted. And people don't like the feeling of feeling conflicted. So they will align themselves with people who feel a certain way and talk a certain way so that they can reduce their own internal cognitive dissonance.
Ooh, that's really interesting. That's also a very broad net. Unfortunately, that could describe a lot of people. Now, I've heard that if you're easily offended, you're easily manipulated. Is that true?
I think, yeah, if you are highly reactive, then you are going to be more easily swayed. And so it's something to just know about yourself. If you hear yourself getting up in arms about something after hearing one report, know that about yourself, that you are highly reactive and that there are things that get under your skin very easily. And that's not necessarily a bad thing because sometimes that's what motivates people to be involved in change and causes. But you also want to know about yourself that that means you're going to overlook if there's evidence and you're not going to question the information that you're being given because it just feels so good to be given it.
That's so scary. Yeah. I should probably save this question to the end, but I'm not going to. Do you think that political parties are actually cults?
So funny, you're reminding me of myself. I went to a restaurant last night and I flipped to the dessert page before the meal. I'm like, sometimes just want to go for the dessert first, right?
What if there's a fire and we have to evacuate the building? I mean, come on.
Yes, you understand. Yeah. Okay, so political parties. I think that they can be. And right now they are more so than a lot of us have seen during our lifetime. Because they're able to use the media in a different way, reach millions all at once. You also have people online, you have influencers, you have people chiming in who are able to reach different demographics and different age groups, et cetera. And so you have the chance for people to be able to be controlled and influenced en masse in a way that you couldn't before when headlines were just printed on newspapers. And if you read the newspaper, you got the news. I think that when we have a situation where people are so involved in organizations that are so polarized and polarizing, then you also have more of a chance for it to be more cult-like. So when we're talking about cults, we're also talking generally about high control groups. And I do see the political parties operating that way now. One might have become more like it in order to combat the fact that the other one was already like it. That can happen. They work off each other in that way in terms of extremism, which is interesting.
It is interesting. And that's kind of why we're here, because I'm like, do we need to just trash this whole thing? Not that I have the power to do that, of course. But, you know, I spoke with one, I think he was a political philosopher, and he suggested that a solution to this two-party system would be to flood the landscape with other parties. He's like, I will never dismantle the two, but if we flood the atmosphere with just like so many choices that the two kind of get drowned out in the middle. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. Because it seems like such a dicey environment, it does make me want to just torch it all, burn it all to the ground.
Right? Yes, we're seeing more and more how it really is not a perfect system. And there are also not enough safeguards for the public. I think we're noticing that political candidates and others in government don't have the kind of stopgap measures around them that a lot of people really feel like should be in place to help people feel a little more secure about what's happening, and that there are limitations placed on people within government to not do certain things or not get away with certain things. What is also important, though, is that we have people right now who are being engaged in discourse that doesn't involve diplomacy. And when there was diplomacy in the past, you got a sense that these were people who were a little more trustworthy and also were open to listening. Whether or not they were faking it, it's hard to know. Like if you're just dressed nicely and looking very casual and having active listening and nodding your head, it could be inside you're saying, he's a moron. And I'm never going to agree to that. But still, there was this sense that there could be dialogue. And now there isn't the dialogue. There's more of a taking sides, which is much more culty, like that you need to have unquestioning allegiance to your party. You need to be involved so that you can feel a sense of belonging, but also that there are these people posturing and having a sense of moral clarity, that they are involved in looking at things the right way. And also, when you add fear, which we'll talk about, this fear, especially of existential threats that the other party is trying to take away our freedoms or they're going to destroy our way of life. That's not really new, but it is huge right now.
I do want to touch on that, but I want to first go back to something you said about, you were kind of alluding to it, really identity over ideas. You know, that lack of diplomacy, lack of actual progress. We're just going, no, be on my team. No, be on my team. And in these circles, the captains of the team, if you will, there doesn't even seem to be permission to be provisional for ideas. It's all or nothing. Each political party has its own profits and they cannot be questioned.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Absolutely. So the cultic piece of that is, well, manyfold. So there is the us versus them. There is the we have the truth and everything they say is false. Opposing views are not only wrong, but dangerous. Right. And I think that when you have a cultic system, it does become you. I mean, there is nothing else that you can be along with being involved in that group and in that ideology. It is the lens through which you see everything, and it's the language you start to use, and it's the way you even view the world and view yourself. It really becomes you.
And I think there seems to be knowledge on behalf of the politicians that of the psychology that causes us to do that, because they seem to use other parts of our identity to manipulate us. And that's the part that really pisses me. I mean, all of it pisses me off, obviously. But like, it just gets my goat when religion and politics are fused together. What happens psychologically for people that causes those things to get glued together?
People have this sense that if they're involved in something that is connected to them religiously, theologically, they will then think they're on the right side. They are on the side with moral clarity. They are on God's side, if that's what, you know, they believe in or need to believe in. It becomes also their way of thinking, and they will also not question the leader as though that leader is God. So many people are brought up in religious communities where this kind of thinking is pretty natural. So they get used to not only being able to do this, but wanting to do this. They want to be involved in something that feels morally superior. They want to be involved in something that they think gives them permission also to say certain things and believe certain things. And also that within religious communities, sometimes you have an acceptance, unfortunately, of the ends justify the means. And because, you know, there have been so much killing in the name of God and religion. And so I'm not saying necessarily that people are advocating killing here, even though I think there are some parties that get close and it gets dicey. But when you are talking to people who, let's say you say, well, but your leader said this on Tuesday and then said the opposite on Wednesday, they'll say, but it's all for the greater good. It all is going to make sense in the end. There is this suspension of disbelief, a suspension of critical thinking that I think people, again, are all too conditioned to be open to. And so they do that here, too. And it gets very frustrating when you're trying to infuse logic and say, but wait, but no, but I have this on video that he said this or she said that. And when you're dealing with people who just want to believe and need to believe, none of that matters. But it should. And it's really difficult when you see that happening.
So you're talking about thought-stopping cliches. What in the, you know, Christian church, some of them that people may have heard before is, you know, you have a problem, you bring it to your fellow church member, and they say, well, you just need to pray about it, or God works in mysterious ways, or let go and let God. It really, like, ends the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Thought-stopping cliches, yes. This idea that was first written about by Robert J. Lifton, who has been someone who I've quoted liberally and tried to give attribution as much as possible. He was someone who was great at coming up with the terminology to describe the things that we do when we're involved in something that becomes our way of thinking 100%. So thought-stopping cliches are these phrases that help people not have to feel something uncomfortable. And it helps people not have to really even think and evaluate what's being said. And it helps someone get through a conversation, kind of glide through a conversation without having any kind of emotion, but feeling like they're kind of superior. There is something now where people will say, okay, that's fake news, or real patriots don't question their country, which is an out for a lot of leaders. And that's a thought-stopping cliche. Also calling something an agenda, that it's the left-wing or right-wing agenda, rather than it being kind of a salient point, maybe something to think about or learn from. And now added to that, we have conspiracy theories. And we have AI. So, no. Right? So now that, you know, like, thanks a lot. So we already had like millions.
You're going to be in business forever. Forever.
Exactly. Thank you. Sort of. If you can just say that something is a conspiracy theory, then it no longer is something you have to give any kind of credibility to. Or you can say it was AI generated to keep us from really looking at what is and what's true. But I think, yeah, a lot of the work that I do in my counseling work is when I notice someone saying this automatic expression, I'll have them stop for a moment and notice what they just did and notice why they felt they needed to do it because of the discomfort that suddenly came up in them that they didn't quite know what to do with. And they're so happy they had a script that they were given where they could just throw some sort of phrase at me and then have a calm nervous system inside while doing it, you know?
Man. Okay, so if I'm understanding you correctly, the reason that religion and politics fuse so easily, like two magnets to each other, is because they actually have a lot of similarities anyway. Am I hearing you correctly?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There is the absolute thinking, this is the right way. This is the only way. This is the true way. We have the truth. It's such similar language. The fear-mongering, what's going to happen to you, what's going to happen. Now it gets extended within politics to what's going to happen to our country if people don't believe this way. There's also the flattery and inclusion. You're part of something special. You've been chosen, or you've been selected, or you're lucky enough to be raised with this right way of thinking. And there's information control, like the different versions of the Bible and the different interpretations. Same thing with whatever news outlet you watch. The repetition of simple messages that get under our skin. The quotes from the Bible, the prayers people will say. Same thing with political messaging. It has to be easily memorizable and repetitious, like the with Obama, hope and change. And with the new administration, make America great again. Same thing. It gets under your skin. And then the cognitive distortions that someone criticizes your leader. Well, yes, people are going to criticize someone who tells the truth. And you hear that when people are defending their pastor, but you also hear it when people are defending their president.
So for those who can't separate the two, religion and politics, I'm curious, because you are in it more than most, right? I mean, these people are literally in your office. Mm-hmm. And I just am wondering, this is my honest to God question, people who are like, you know, let's bring the nation back to God kind of thing. And that's kind of part of their political motivations. Do they not know about North Korea or Iran or Nazi Germany or England in the Middle Ages? Like, do the dangers of a theocracy not, is it not a part of their thought at all? I'm not trying to be snarky. I'm just like genuinely asking from your mental health professional point of view, why do they think that's a good idea?
So many people think it's a good idea because they think it's the only way to save, in religious terms, save our country. Okay. And also, my bias, and I will state it as a bias, that when people have this way of thinking where everyone needs to believe the same way, everyone needs to be the same, like people who are not at all comfortable with seeing things along a spectrum, like gender identity, like sexual preference, like anything, they need for it to just have two polar opposites. They need to be male, female. There need to be just good and bad, right and wrong. That kind of black and white thinking, they're very uncomfortable with the gray. They're very uncomfortable with other beliefs, and they don't see that that can exist side by side. They see it as something that's going to take away from the ability to control the masses, but also the ability to assure and ensure that people who are part of a country are all going to be believing the same way, i.e. the right way. And it's also the only way for God, according to them, to be happy with the country as it is and to be able to shine his or her light on this country and be able to offer the benefits of doing it the right way. That's why you have these seven mountain mandates that someone was talking about on my podcast, where they're trying to infuse religion in these different seven areas of education, media, et cetera, in ways that we might not know but are slowly encroaching, and Project 2025, et cetera. And so to answer your question directly about don't they see, like, don't they notice that when a lot of these countries, there is mayhem because of this, and there's mass killing, and there are women who will lose their rights immediately and have to cover themselves, and we no longer see them and see they're invisible to the world. And that seems to happen more and more in countries where there's religion that's infused, that it affects the women so detrimentally and dangerously, actually. I think they believe that it's going to be different, that we're going to have our own more enlightened way of doing it, and we will never have it be reduced to looking like that, whatever that is, because there's already a superiority to it. Our version of it is going to be great. It never works out that way, though. But people don't necessarily learn from history when they're so determined to create their own.
Well, this brings us back to the fear then, doesn't it? Because like you painted this picture so well, by the way, thank you for that. So then the side of politics that's like, oh, we do not want theocracy, you know, now they feel on high alert. Their fear is very elevated. So now, regardless, their mantra could become, well, now you must vote for our side to prevent that side. And there we are back at identities over ideas, like, okay, anything but them, you know, like, right. So, yeah. I mean, how do we get off the train?
There needs to be a greater sophistication, if at all possible, where people can actually come to realize and be open to the fact that to a great degree, they're being played. They're getting caught up in something that is not going to end well for most people, including them. And they need to be able to look at that. I think one of the things that helps is when people study, when people go to school and they learn about history, when they learn about other countries, when they learn about other religions, when they learn about political movements, and then they have a frame of reference and they can see how one thing leads to the next, and they don't want to be on that train because they see where it used to go and where it can go and where it's going in some other countries. But we're so insulated here. We learn very little about what's happening in the rest of the world. And the people in the United States also who are born here are the ones who I think speak the fewest other languages than other people in other countries a lot of the time, because there is this sort of America first. If you don't speak English, then, you know, what's wrong with you? I'm not going to bother with you, as opposed to let's learn other languages so we can learn about other cultures. There's just not as much interest. And so that means there's not going to be enough and as much education about noticing what happens elsewhere. So I think education is going to be very, very important. And also, for people to realize the amount of indoctrination that they're under and to not feel like they can't admit it because it's a weakness. It just means you're a human being who is open to messaging. Marketers know that. Any commercial, any company, any billboard, anyone who puts together anything will know that. And they're not saying, ha ha, you're all stupid. They're saying, ha ha, you're all influenceable. We all are. It's part of our survival that we learn that we're able to be influenced by others, so that if someone is trying to give us a message of something really to watch out for, we'll be open to it. But it can be taken advantage of. And so I think for people to not feel too much pride to really look at how influenceable they are and society is, to be caught up in this sort of torch and pitchfork way of behaving, and to move from what I call reacting to acting, because we are very engaged in reacting. And that's what causes us, I think, to be up in arms and to tout these messaging points without really even knowing what they mean and who gave them to us and why, and how it serves them, not us. So instead, we want to act, which means let's take a moment and do some research, be able to look at a news outlet that is not clearly biased one way or another, and really be open to learning. It's not as sexy. It's not as dramatic. It is actually, I think, much more mature. But it's about being an adult and not a reactive kind of child in a way that the media is hoping you'll be.
I love that you reminded us of our humanity through it, because that not only creates grace for ourselves, it creates grace for others. Because as I hinted at in the beginning, in the intro, these are the modern problems that are creating wedges in friendships and families. And I think that the humanities perspective may also give us maybe just a little, maybe not a lot, maybe a little grace for those that are groomed into these positions of leadership. Because as you mentioned, education can be such a powerful antidote to this situation. So obviously the lack of can really create the opposite problem. And we see, you know, the sons and daughters of politicians kind of coming up through the ranks. So can you just imagine what their household must sound like?
Oh, my goodness. Right. Yeah. I can only imagine that dinner table conversation. Woo. And I also think about how much is driven in those households and in a lot of households now that's based on a dopamine rush, on really feeling a high from this. And the other thing about acting rather than reacting is that it's not going to give you that high. It's not going to make you kind of ready to take on the cause and to be charging out the door and doing something or saying something where you're willing to lose a friendship over it just because you now have the sense of great importance and you have a message that you think needs to be heard by everyone. I do think that people need to kind of understand that they're involved then in something that has been stirred up in them by someone else. And you want to wonder, like, if it is that, like, are people willing to recognize, I think, that both parties engage in similar actions, but in your mind, you're only vilifying one of them. That means you're being played and you don't realize that you're being played. Like, you have decided who your enemy is. You've decided who you can't trust, but they're both doing the same thing. And so to be open to that, it doesn't mean you have to distrust everyone. It doesn't mean you have to hate your party. It just means you want to be able to make decisions that are based on fact, not fiction, and based on fact, not dopamine and what got you the most excited.
Wow. I mean, that here's my little like glimmer of hope in what you said is so many people now are prioritizing mental health, which means they're in therapy. So, right? Or it could mean, it doesn't necessarily, but that is an important ingredient for a lot of people. So the good news is everything that you said about like, here is the direction of hope. Here is the direction of a solution. Mm-hmm. Everything that you've said starts with personal awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that could be like the thing we hold on to as okay, there is a solution. People are going in the right direction. And if they can realize that they are triggered by X or Y, then they can easily be manipulated by that same thing, that they should take pause and consider the source, consider the circumstance, like you just said. That's brilliant.
Yeah, I think it unfortunately makes us have these blind spots that are, it's true for everyone. I mean, it's like if you start to date someone new who you think is the best thing ever, and you can tell by the response that other people are giving you for this person that they're not so convinced. And you're also potentially wondering why you're not getting why they're all kind of worried for you. And it's not until the chemicals wear off that you start to see who they are and who your friends and family saw who they were because they didn't have the same chemical release in their system. And then it's really hard because you don't want to have the I told you so's. So you're like, you hang on to the fact that you still think they're great for much longer than you should. But I think it is true for a lot of people. We want to really feel good about our decisions, but we do have these blind spots and we want to be able to admit it, but it's very hard to do so. It just in this day and age, because of social media, there's this whole idea of influence called liking, that you want to be liked and you want to like this person. You want to have likability. And sometimes having an opposing viewpoint means taking the risk of not being liked. And with people feeling disenfranchised, they'll sometimes do what they think they need to do and say what they need to say and believe in what they need to believe in order to be liked or in order to literally get more likes on social media, you know? So it's a really interesting time.
How accountable should we be holding media to all this?
I think that media should be held accountable. I don't think that they are the ones who are the source of the problem in total. I think they feed the masses in a way that they know that the masses are going to be open to and hungry for. So I think it's a symbiotic relationship. And if people could be more up in arms and say, okay, we're done. We're done with headlines being things that are just to cultivate emotion and make us see the story in a different way. We want actual news. And if we don't get actual news, we're not going to watch anymore. Then I think the media will change. But until that happens, until it stops working, until there are people who just don't want to buy the product anymore because they don't trust what's in it, the media is going to keep churning out what people will consume.
Well, you mentioned AI earlier, and that brings in like another kind of gnarly ingredient in this media space, because we haven't been digital humans for very long, only since the 1990s, right? Mm-hmm. And I've heard that the average voter has 5,000 data points on them. And so let's just assume that's true. If that is true, then data mining is like the latest grooming technique, right? And the media is serving it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting. Right. It's like having, you know, it's like dining on algorithms. And that's what we are fed. And I think people are a little more savvy now, but not completely, about how much what comes their way is something that they've kind of asked for with that slant. By telling the algorithms what you're interested in and what you care about, for which articles you click on and how long you look at them and all the things that are now being followed, which is, you know, which can be frightening. And it's also interesting because there are a number of people who I deal with who were raised in environments where they believed that the people in charge had a sense of knowing. They just somehow knew the truth. So people will say to me, oh, but I wasn't sure how to feel about this. But then I started getting articles about this particular movement or this leader, and I realized that was a sign. Not in the slightest is it a sign of anything except that technology was following what you seemed to be interested in and what spoke to you and then fed you more of it. So I think people don't have enough of a critical mind to understand what's happening and that they are being influenced, but not because of God and not because someone knows more about what they need to know and what they need to learn.
No one likes to hear that they're not using critical thinking, though. That is a big barrier. And so I think that's why I want to emphasize for the listener that we have only had the internet since the 90s, as a public, mm-hmm. anyway, right? It's been present before that.
Yeah.
So it's like no one taught us how to do this. No one mm-hmm. said, mm-hmm. you know, this is how you distinguish X from Y. They literally just gave us the internet, and then we had Google, and then now we have social media, and then there are algorithms that we know nothing about. It's literally just winging it. So I just want to take the sting out of anyone that's like listening and going, oh God, mm-hmm. that's me, but feels that inner resistance towards the idea that they may not be using critical thought processes.
I love that you brought this up, because this is really, unfortunately, where a lot of these conversations go, where you can feel like you're blaming the victim. And it is not at all to do this, that sometimes people don't know that they are being influenced. They might not know what the computer algorithms are up to, and they might not know that that's why they're getting that article, or they're getting links to different things that they think are a sign. Once people are taught, though, what the system is that's in place to do that, sometimes then they're able to learn not to pay attention as much to the things that are being given and not to see it as a sign. But unless they know what's happening, like pulling the curtain back on the wizard, like you need to see what's happening, right? It's like controlling all of these little buttons. Then people have more of a chance to really to really get it. And it's good to understand that our ability to be influenced comes from the fact that we are socialized beings, but for our survival. This has been an evolutionary process that we have depended upon. That, for example, if we're living in the forest or wherever, in a jungle, and suddenly we see people running a certain direction, right? We're like, we won't go like, oh, they're such idiots. We'll say, oh, okay, grab your stuff. You won't even know why, but you'll know you probably need to also. And so we will then go running and then probably see that there is a tiger or something chasing or a bear or whatever. Like, that was the reason. We might not know why they were running, but we're going to join them. And that's how we have survived through millennia. And so you can't fight that. But you want to help people understand that for now, if it's really something that is not going to be about life or death, then they have the luxury of sitting back and saying, we just noticed everyone was running that way, but I'm actually good. I'm sitting in my house. And so I might not have to run out my door and follow them. Let me see if I can go online and see why everyone seems to be running east or whatever it is. And maybe they got charged up to do it based on something false. Let me find out. And the let me find out part is the part that I think is missing here. And also because people don't know where to get this information in a trustworthy space. Let me find out from whom and can I trust them? And that's where it starts to go down the rabbit hole.
Well, let's talk about that. I know we just have a few minutes left here, but where can people go to get reliable information that is not captured and manipulated by a political party? It doesn't seem that there are protections or laws anymore that incentivize or require media outlets to provide both sides, if you will, or counter arguments to anything.
Right. And that is so frightening, especially because they reach millions of people every minute of the day. There are certain media outlets that are more trustworthy. I believe there is a company called Ground.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of it. Right. I think I know. Mm-hmm.
And other companies like it where they will put out articles and then will have a spectrum from right, sort of left to right, conservative to liberal, Democrat to Republican, sort of where that article leans based on the content. And they researched the content to see if it's leaning more one way or another. Also, who wrote the article, what party they might be involved in, other articles they've written. They have different ways of evaluating it so that you know where this information is coming from and how much of it is going to be accurate, how much of it is going to be kind of tipped to one side or another and not necessarily be objective. And so definitely check those out online because you want to know that the source of the information is going to be a more objective source. You also want to notice studies that you're being given to look at because when I was teaching a class about this, I said, tomatoes kill people. And they said, what? I said, because, okay, notice if you read a study about that, tomatoes kill people, which they don't necessarily unless you have a tremendous allergy to them. But most people in their lifetime have eaten a tomato in one form or another, either through ketchup or something, or it's an additive or whatever, or on pizza. And those people are going to die because people die. But it doesn't mean they caused it. And also you want to notice if that study was put out by the Mustard Seed Growers of America, right? Like, is it through the competition, right?
Yeah.
So not only do you want to read the headline, and a lot of people just read headlines, but you want to go into the article. If there is a study, notice the study, notice who published it, and then notice who paid for it, and what they have to gain by you taking in this information as they've presented it. And so you just want to go behind. You want to get under it. You want to get behind the information and not just react to it on the surface.
That's good advice. As I was kind of imagining the perspective of a listener taking in this advice, I imagine them going, oh my God, who has time for that? But I realize, you know, if you don't scroll social media, or if you get on there with a purpose, you know, more purposefully, more intentionally, you do open up a lot of time. I want your take on this. Is I might add a suggestion of using settings in your computer and your phone that maybe decrease the amount of data mining. If you use Amazon and Facebook, those are huge offenders in that area.
Right.
But you can use alternative search engines like DuckDuckGo or Brave, or, you know, ones that aren't necessarily collecting every tiny bit of info every time that you pop onto a website.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's very smart. Right. So put in the safeguards, the stopgap measures. A lot of people don't know that they exist. I'm really glad that you mentioned that. And you're right. The things that I am mentioning can feel exhausting. Like people can just want to go take a nap from hearing the list of things right, they need to do. But what's also true is that sometimes getting to the root of something does take a little more work. And we are busy, and we also want to go towards things that are more fun to look at. And so we're going to have this need to just kind of look at the headlines. But if you know that about yourself, that you really like exciting stories, you do want to also know that means that you're going to be caught up in a groundswell of some sort that might be false. And so before you act on it, before you donate to that, before you start to speak that as your talking point, before it shifts you psychologically, before it shifts you in terms of your morality and what you think is okay and what's not okay, then you want to do your research. Then you want to just do a tiniest bit of research to see if they are trying to get you to believe something because they have something to gain from it, not you.
Well said. Thank you so much for coming back and sharing your insight and your tips. This has been such a good discussion. Tell people where they can engage with you. You have a journal. There may be a book coming out. You've got an awesome podcast. Drop all the things.
All the things. Yes, people can find me at rachelbernsteintherapy.com, and you can find out about what I do there. And if you want to make an appointment, feel free. If you want to check out the podcast, it's the Indoctrination Podcast, Indoctrination Show. And you can check it out wherever you listen to podcasts. And yes, there is a journal that is going to be out for people who have been involved in cult groups, in high demand groups, in controlling and manipulative relationships, who are thinking about breaking free or who have done so and want to know how to heal from that experience. And it's a way of doing some kind of inner work and writing out some of your thoughts, but getting some guidance along the way. And yes, I have a book in the works, which hopefully will be out in the next year. And I'm very happy to say that people are really getting a lot more educated now about influence and about cults. And they just need to see how and when it starts to apply in their own lives and to not be afraid of it, to not be afraid to see it. It, again, just means you're a human being.
Absolutely. Well said. Thank you again, Rachel. I appreciate you so much.
Appreciate you, too, and all the work that you do. It's a total pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, you'll also like the one with the happiness researcher about the idea that your happiness could be getting politicized. That's episode 156. Stay tuned next week for a remastered favorite asking if sex addiction is a real thing or a convenient diagnosis. Until then, keep it curious.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.